ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। Last week we were studying this four types of human beings called as aggressive good, aggressive bad, passive good and passive bad. Aggressive good is a person who functions with complete awareness using the subtle intellect and the gross intellect in life. Whereas an aggressively bad person uses only the gross intellect and his emotions are impure, highly selfish in nature. Whereas the passive people are, some of them may have good emotions, some of them may have negative emotions. Meaning, good people, bad people. But, since they don't use the intellect, they are controlled in life by the aggressively bad people. So Vedanta says, it is not enough to be just good. You have to grow aggressively good. And if you study the Vedanta philosophy, you can become aggressively good. You will have that objectivity. So like we discussed last week about conflicts that may arise between two dharmas. So if you are a thinking type, then you will know what to do. Otherwise you may not be able to really function in the context. A lot of these people who fought for Duryodhana on Duryodhana's side, while they had their own reasoning, they were all falling for the lower dharma. When they had to rise and identify with the higher dharma. That was the problem. Independently, if you discuss, you have to understand that you have to use, I mean, you have to go by your obligation. Like Karna said that, you know, I've eaten the salt of Duryodhana. So how can I go against him? And just because you eat salt, if that fellow is so negative, for the whole world, how can you support that fellow? So basically they do not have the clarity between lower dharma and higher dharma. They all were caught. They were passively good and passively bad people. Duryodhana was aggressively bad, whereas Sri Krishna was aggressively good. An aggressively good person is able to function as a witness. There is cheer. There is no attachment to the result. If some plan A fails, you'll be ready with plan B. You understand? Oh my God, I am a failure. There is no such thing as failure for an aggressively good person. He continues putting in the effort in the right direction. So, an aggressively good person is a winner from within who has no defeat. We are all, even if we win the war or win something in life, we'll still be losers because of our attachment, because of our selfishness. Therefore, he says, you have to grow to aggressive goodness. And to grow to aggressive goodness, you've got to gain the knowledge of Vedanta. So the next topic he talks about is the joy of learning. Continue. Joy of learning.
Joy of learning. The knowledge of Vedanta confers aggressive goodness on you, a knowledge that develops a powerful intellect, which clearly distinguishes virtue from vice, provides you the guidelines to destroy evil and protect the good. Thereafter, you will not be victimized by anyone, nor would you victimize others. You would mean and do good to the society. Become a beacon of knowledge and virtue for the rest of the world to follow.
Yeah, so in other words, once you gain the knowledge of Vedanta, you will understand about yourself, you will understand about the world, the nature, how everybody functions. What is goodness, What is selfishness? What is evil? Anything that will take you away from the self, away from the harmony in the society, is evil. So you cannot go by your conditionings. So you understand the life in total, and then you will clearly be on the side of goodness all the time. So he says, provides you the guidelines to destroy evil and protect good. Thereafter, you will not be victimized by anyone, nor would you victimize others. There is no interest in victimizing anybody. You will do the right action. People may, due to their activities, get victimized. Duryodhana suffered because of his actions. Ravana suffered because of his actions. You don't have to feel that you have done something against them. So I keep saying in the class that Lord Ram is not a serial killer going out to look for people to kill. When they go against Dharma as a Kshatriya, he had to protect them. So he says, you would mean and do good to the society, become a beacon of knowledge and virtue for the rest of the world to follow. We'll set an example. Continue.
People carry the general impression that Vedanta is abstract, terse, inaccessible, not meant for the common people, and that only those who are brilliant should attempt to approach it. This is not true. The misconception arose because the subject matter of Vedanta has to be learned and practiced like any technique, skill or art. And the process of learning takes a while for the learner to relish it. The initial period of learning is trying. It puts off even some sincere seekers. Ironically, it is a knowledge which is most fascinating. The study of Vedanta in the early hours of the morning becomes most inspiring. An enchanting experience day after day.
See, generally the idea when they think of Vedanta in everybody's head is, it is extremely subtle, very abstract. We can't grasp it that easily. It's something that is not meant for day-to-day living. It is something that is meant for realization of God, which is all nothing to do with our daily living. This is understanding. Very abstract, you know. Talks about God, talks about after-death experience. It talks about life after death. It talks about heaven, hell. And all these theories are fine, but then how is it helpful for me today in my daily living? This is a misconception they have. So, he says, no, that is not true. It talks about your daily living. It helps you to face your challenges cheerfully. And then he says, firstly, you remove this misconception and approach the subject. Initially, the subject will not be catering to your likes and dislikes. So you won't get instant pleasure when you approach the subject. He says, the process of learning takes a while for the learner to relish it also. Initial period of learning is trying his. It's difficult to sit through. But once you begin to manage the initial stage in life, when you approach the subject with Artha, he says you will start relishing. He says, the study of Vedanta should be done in the early hours of the morning. When you do it in the early hours of the morning, when the mind is quiet, it becomes very inspiring. He says it's an enchanting experience day after day. But first, initially, you have to go through it. It's not easy. It's very difficult in the beginning. Especially early hours of the day, you have to get up, sit and study. It's tough. That too in Delhi winters. It's even worse. You feel very comfortable, you know, lying in the bed, covering ourselves in quilt and sleeping. Whereas if you can't get out, first thing when you get out in the morning, you have to cater to the subtle aspect of your personality. Then only you have to get to the gross. From subtle to gross, you have to come. You do ulta. There are people who get up very, very early and go for a walk or a jog. That you can do a little later, by 5:45, 6. first thing in the morning, sit down and cater to your subtle intellect and the philosophy. Purification of your heart. Once you do that day after day, you will feel very cheerful. That will bring a lot of inspiration for you to follow it again. That's what he means. Continue.
The knowledge of Vedanta is best grasped between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. If impractical, you may choose a time as close to it as possible. The knowledge has to be taken in regulated doses. Approach it as you would any scientific knowledge. Study and reflect daily upon the truths therein. Do not proceed further until you have absorbed the portion already covered. Thus, through systematic study and reflection, you gain the light of wisdom, a light that will guide you towards spiritual enlightenment.
Best time called as Brahma Muhurta. That is 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. See, the more sattva you have, it will automatically wake you up between this time. And to develop and increase sattva, this time is conducive. So, he says 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. between this time is the best time. But somewhere closer to that. You find 4 o'clock is too difficult. Okay, fine. 5:15, 5:30 at least. Get up as early as possible. You are having slept at least for 7 to 8 hours. You sit down and reflect on the truths laid down in the scriptures, which will make you think, which will sharpen your gross intellect, and it will take you towards the subtle intellect. You start discussing and thinking about the subtler aspects of life. I mean, what is real and what is unreal, etc. So he says, thus through systematic study and reflection, you gain light of wisdom. This topic is light of wisdom. If you want to gain light of wisdom, it has to be done on a daily basis in the early hours of the day. There is no other way. Now you can do it later on also, no problem. But the best time is between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. Supposing you say, no sir, what is wrong if I do it in the night? Okay, do it. Doing any time is better than not doing. But the best effect is early hours of the day. When your body is rested enough, when your willpower is high, when you're able to think precisely without your inner desires waking up. Early hours, the desire is not woken up. So that's the time you are really able to be chitted. Therefore, he says the time. Now the next topic, next chapter, that is culmination of human life. What is the goal of human life? What's the terminus of human life? This is the last chapter in this portion. Culmination of human life. Read the topic, the role of religion.
Culmination of human life. The role of religion. The word religion is derived from two Latin terms, re and ligare. Re means back, again. Ligare. I don't know how it's pronounced.
Ligare, yes.
Ligare means to bind, join. Religion is meant to unite one back to one's origin, the supreme self. Every human being is born with inherent desires which separate him from the self. The self within is the abode of absolute knowledge, peace and bliss. So are you, born divorced from the self. Having lost the core of your personality, you have meandered into its enveloping sheets of the body, mind and intellect. You are now caught up in the maze of perception, emotion and thought. Religion, divested of its dogmatic outgrowth, essentially relieves you from the persecutions of your material equipment and reveals your spiritual self. It is a mysterious process by which your mind intellect traces back and loses itself in the inscrutable source, Atma, the supreme self, the soul of all religion. Religion, therefore, is used to regain your lost identity with yourself, attain the ultimate spiritual enlightenment.
So what is the role of religion? First of all, the word religion means to unite back to the origin. It is a Latin term which means to unite back to the origin. Religare. Two Latin terms is this. Re and ligare. Re means back again. Ligare means to unite. So unite back to the origin. The idea is you have risen from that infinite truth and you are now imagining yourself to be this limited individual. You have to get back to that infinite truth. Today, wrongly you are identifying yourself with body, mind, intellect and getting persecuted by the material layers. It is very important for you to live your life according to others' dictation. This is the condition that we are all in today. Even our choice of clothes is determined by, you know, some outsiders. You are not living your life. You are all living a slavish life. So that's what he means by saying persecutions of your material layer. What happens to the body happens to you. What happens to the mind happens to you. What happens to the intellect happens. If somebody has a very low opinion about you, that is enough to disturb you. How can that person think of me like that? I'm worthy even better. So, you know, it can upset you. That's what he means by saying it relieves you from the persecutions of the material equipments and reveals your spiritual self. It helps you to identify with the core, the center. We have moved away from the center. So religion is a technique that brings us back to the center. If we are centered, then we won't be affected. We have moved away from the center. That's why we are all affected. When you move far away, the affectation is too much. When you get closer and closer to the center, the affectation is very less. Where is your identification? Not where you work. If your fundamentals are clear, wherever you are, you can be happy. If your fundamentals are not clear, even in heaven, you will be very unhappy. Isn't it? There's a story where a guy had died and he was taken for judgment. And when his turn came, his punya and papa was weighed. And he was told that you've done quite a good amount of punya as well and good amount of pap. So sometime you have to spend in hell, sometime you have to spend in heaven. Which one would you like to go first? I have no experience about these two, I've only heard about it. So I want to see, then decide. Fair enough, which one would you like to see first? He said, I would like to see hell first. When he went to hell, he had a different idea about hell. He thought, you know, because you've heard stories about hell, which is like people are being deep fried in a big kadai and all that kind of a stuff. So he thought it would be a very horrible place, stinking, you know. But when he went there, it was so beautiful. He said, my God, this itself is like heaven. By mistake, did these fellows bring me to heaven? They said, no, this is hell only. But it is so beautiful. Then they said, okay, come, let's see the inmates of hell. It was lunchtime, so they were all seated on the dining table, were about to eat, but they could not eat because their hands were all stretched out. They couldn't bend it. So they were not able to eat. Sumptuous meal is spread out, but they could not eat. They understood, oh, hell means, okay, you know, everything will be there, but you won't be able to enjoy. Okay, then let me go to heaven. Heaven was also like this. It was beautiful. There also the people's hands were stretched out. So he was wondering how they are going to eat. Then he saw that each one was feeling the other who was sitting opposite to them. Then he understood, oh, this is heaven. Okay. So in other words, heaven or hell is not a place. It's your mind. Please understand that. So therefore, you live in the same world. You don't have to go anywhere else. You be amongst the same people. You understand? See, the more and more you understand Vedanta, you won't be having any, what do you call, negative feeling towards any environment. Because you understand that the environment is your making. There is some demand in you for that environment. Otherwise, it won't be provided to you. Nothing will be provided to you if you have not been asked for it. If you have not asked for it. Everything in life, you get what you deserve, not what you desire. Now, when the situation comes that you have to move out, you have nothing against moving away. But there is no that negative feeling as if I go there, it will be fine. No such thing. So, he therefore says, you know, religion is a science that helps you to go beyond your mind and intellect and lose the ego in the self within. We have lost the self and we are holding on to the false personality called the ego. Religion is a science that helps you to see the truth and readily you sacrifice the false non-existent ego in the truth. When the false gets dissolved in the truth. In other words, when you see an elephant made of wood, you don't see the wood. You only see the elephant. And when you see the wood, the elephant is dissolved in the wood. Isn't it? In Tamil, there's a beautiful scripture by the name Tirumandiram. It's by a guru called Tirumular. Tirumular gave us Tirumandiram. In that he says, Marathai maraithadu maamada yaanai. Marathil maraindadu maamada yaanai. Parathai maraithadu paarmudal bhoodam. Parathil maraindadu paarmudal bhoodam. Means, maram means wood. Marathai maraithadu maamada yaanai. Elephant covered the wood. When you saw the elephant, you didn't see the wood. Isn't it? When you go to buy an elephant that is made of wood, in Kerala, when you travel, you will get this. You won't see the wood, only see the elephant. When you have the perception of the elephant, you don't see the wood. When you see the wood, what happens to the elephant? It gets dissolved in the wood. So religion is a science that helps you to dissolve this identification with this name and form. When we see this name and form, we don't see the truth. When we dissolve, when we see the truth, the name and form get dissolved. All the differences get dissolved. Everything goes. How come? Suddenly. Because you know, having identification at a much subtler level. Earlier identification was at the grosser level. This is called religion. If you are practicing this type of religion, this spirituality. Otherwise, a lot of people are just given into mechanical rituals. Mechanical rituals. See, rituals are also there in every religion for the purification of inner personality. Without that, if you just mechanically do, it is of no use. So the mind, intellect, ego should dissolve. If it gets more and more strengthened, then you will start fighting my religion versus your religion. Continue.
This state of being lies within you. Yourself, Atma, Brahman is supreme. You will have to transcend the limitation of your body, mind and intellect to reach yourself. The sense organs of the body cannot perceive it, nor the emotions of the mind feel it, nor the thoughts of the intellect conceive it. Yourself is the subject, not the object of experience. Hence, you cannot contact the self with your material equipment. You can only become the self by pursuing the spiritual path, like the dreamer becoming the waker. The dreamer also cannot perceive, feel or conceive the waker within the dream body, mind and intellect. The dreamer can only transform himself into the waker. The role of religion is to bring about the transformation from the waking state to self-realization. That is the goal of human existence. You then become all-knowing, all-blissful.
See, there is nothing but Keno Upanishad. In Keno Upanishad, which we studied, you remember, he says, na tatra chakshur gacchati na va gacchati no mano na vitmo na vinimo yataita danushichyat. Na tatra chakshuhu. There, chakshu doesn't go. Na tatra chakshur gacchati na va gacchati no mano. Na vidmo na vijanimo yataita danushichyat. The sense, it is not what you perceive, but what makes you perceive. It's not what you feel, but what makes you feel. It's not what you think, but what makes you think. It is subtle. You cannot grasp it with your perceptions, actions, emotions and thoughts. It is that which makes your perceptions, actions, emotions and thoughts to function in the first place. So that is called Atma, Brahman. It is supreme. You will have to transcend all the limitations and then become the self. You cannot know the self. You can only become the self. Self is not an object of comprehension. It is a subjective apprehension. And to make you understand this, always this dream example is given. A dreamer can never understand the waker. The dreamer can only become the waker. When the dreamer becomes the waker, what happens to the dream world? When you are woken up from your dream, what happens to the dream? It gets completely dissolved. So like that, when you wake up from this so-called dreamlike world, when you do vichara, you will understand that this is also not different from the dream. That's why it's extremely important for us to do the vichara. Don't do vichara, this will look pretty real. But once you do vichara, you understand that this is not real. If I claim that the dream I experienced at night is unreal, I have no better logic or reason to prove that this world is any more real. Because everything that I used to say that is unreal, same thing will prove that this is also unreal. Because who is calling that as real, dream world as real? The dreamer. Who is calling this world is real? The waker. But when the waker moves to dream, he had no experience of this dream world. Sorry, this waking world. So from that point of view, this is also temporary existence. Reality is that which existed in the past, present and future. That measurement if you take, you will see that this experience that I am having today doesn't stand the test of reality. So then I have no better logic or reason to prove that this is any more real. So I can only wake up from this waking state, merge with the self and I become the self. I cannot be the waker and understand the self. I cannot be the dreamer and understand the waker. Not possible. ultimately we need to be ready to resolve ourselves. You understand? It's not possible otherwise. Unless and until you are ready to lose, you cannot win. This is what I'm saying. In life, it is a game of losing. It is not a game of winning. By losing, you win. With your children, you lose, you win. With your spouse, you lose, you win. With your parents, your in-laws, your society, your boss, your colleagues, you lose, you win. But we are not ready to lose. We want to dominate. We want to conquer. Then there is friction. It's very interesting. Ego has to surrender. When the ego surrenders, relationship beautifully blossoms. So, in the Atma also, finally, you got to understand the truth and ego has to surrender. If you keep the ego and you want to understand the truth, possible. Big circle cannot come within the small circle. The small circle has to go within the big circle. And when the small circle goes within the big circle, it becomes the big circle. It is the big circle. So the day your knowledge prepares you to lose, you win. But if you say, oh, no, two scriptures, I will understand the truth. I'll grasp it. You cannot. Not possible. That's all he's saying. So, that is the final goal. The final goal of human existence is to realize the self. And when you realize the self, you become all-knowing and all-blissful. All blissful because you go beyond the desires. You become the bliss itself. And all knowing because you are the truth behind all the knowing equipments through which all knowledges are possible. You become that knowing principle. Therefore you become Sarvajna. Sarvajna means all knowing. And then you become Ananda. So that is what he says, all blissful. Continue.
Your body, mind and intellect transact pleasure, love and knowledge, but they cannot provide you with ultimate satisfaction, contentment, fulfillment in life. The more the pleasures your body indulges in, the more you seek. Likewise, the more love your mind is involved in, the more you want. So does your intellect crave for more and more knowledge. There is no end to sensual gratification, emotional contentment, or intellectual satisfaction. Hence, all the happiness derived from material equipments is limited, wanting. You can never find satiation through these avenues. For attaining the absolute happiness, you will have to go beyond the prescience of your body, mind and intellect and reach the self within. Therein lies the absolute happiness that you seek in vain in the external world.
See, first of all, what is preventing you from moving to the center? It is the so-called pleasures that I am experiencing at the external level. Isn't it? See, in the center, there is treasure. Now, nobody wants you to go and take away the treasure. So what do? They keep you in the outer circle, inducing fear in you about the unknown that is there in the center, and telling you that don't lose this comfort that you are going through now for the unknown bliss or unknown suffering. So you are better off therefore being here, and to stay here you are given rewards. So nobody wants to really move away from the pleasures that you get from the world. You get pleasure from the through the bodily transactions and through the emotions, love, and through the intellect, knowledge. They can only give you limited joy. And we fool ourselves with that limited joy. You have to be ready to lose your current position to be able to enjoy the higher position. If you're not ready for it, how will you get it? You want that also, this also not possible. So that's what he's saying. You're all interested in just physical gratification, emotional satisfaction, contentment, and intellectual satisfaction. But actually, the real pleasure is not there in the outside world. You can never find satiation through these avenues. The more you get, the more you want. The more you get, the more you want. And you will feel that you are in deepness. Therefore, he says, the real joy is within you. You have to cross the body, cross the mind, cross the intellect. Realize yourself. Wherein lies the absolute happiness that you seek in vain in the external world. Actually, if you study Vedanta correctly, you will understand that there is no joy in the external world. Whatever joy you are experiencing through the external world is actually the reflection of the joy which is within you. Temporarily, it is getting reflected in that particular object. That's about it. Continue.
However, the mass of humanity perceive the pleasure and joy in the objects and beings of the world. People actually experience it. Hence, they go after them. But these objects and beings present only a false glamour of pleasure and joy. They inherently lack it. This truth is never accepted, as people claim their experience to be just the contrary. Even those who profess to know the truth are not well established in it. They understand it academically, not really to live by it. Hence, it becomes virtually impossible to conceive people of the absurdity of worldly pursuit while they firmly believe in and continue to draw their share of happiness from it.
In short, what he's saying is, it's very difficult for people to swallow that there is no joy in the external world because their experience is giving a contrary thing. I just contacted, I'm getting joy. What are these fellows talking about? There is no joy. Vedanta says there is no joy coming from the outside world. But my experience, when I contact, getting joy, that's why I'm getting trapped more and more. So he says, they understand it academically. Some people really don't get it. They just academically they understand. Correct, correct. But when it comes to practicality, they again get lost in the reflected joy that they get from the contact with the world. So it's almost virtually impossible to convince people. They firmly believe in this conditioning that there is joy in the external world and continue pursuing the world to draw their share of happiness from it. They don't stop. Because you're getting some kind of a joy when you contact the world. That's the trap. See, when you give freebies, people fall for it. When you speak sugar-coated words, you will fall for it. Before they realize that they have fallen, you give them more sugar-coated words, they will continue being in it. So, in fact, if you are sattvic, you will be careful about sugar. Anything sugary, they have to be careful.
This strange phenomena of deriving happiness from where it does not exist is well portrayed in the reflection of light. The sun above is one, while the reflections of the sun are innumerable in countless reflected media in the universe. There is light in the sun alone. The reflections have no light inherent in them. You appreciate this when you get close and examine them carefully. So it is with the objects and beings of the world. They do not contain any pleasure or joy. It is the bliss of the self that is reflected in them. What you enjoy is the reflected bliss. You will realize this when your intellect gets closer and examines them, that the bliss is within you, not in the external world.
See, this concept, first I remember, when Swamiji was explaining to us that day when I was studying in the ashram, talking about 93 or 94, we had gone to a hotel in Faridabad, Lonavala. Somebody had come and they took us all for nice breakfast in Lonavala. We were only like 13, 14 students at that time studying in the ashram. Including some guests, we were including Swamiji and all, we were like probably 20 people. They said, okay, we'll take you out for breakfast today. We all went for breakfast. And there, after having had sumptuous breakfast, we came to the ashram. In the class, Swamiji was saying, there is no joy in the external world. Everybody said, what is this, Swamiji? We just had a nice meal. How can you say that there is no joy coming from there? Then he explained to all of us with this example also. See, time and again we have discussed this. This is a very important concept in Vedanta. You have to understand this. This example is easy to understand. You know very well there is no light coming from the moon. The light that seems to be coming from the moon is nothing but the reflected light. Isn't it? It's the light of the sun that is coming through the moon. There is no light in the moon. There is no light in the moon. Sun's light is coming through the moon, getting reflected and coming. Similarly, there is no joy in the world. It is the Atma's bliss that is getting reflected in the object. That's what Vedanta wants to say. Now, how do you understand this? An object that seems to be giving you joy should give joy to everybody if the joy is inherent in it. If it is inherent in it, it should give joy to everybody who contacts it. And every time you contact it, the object that is giving joy to you today, you find that same object, there are so many people who hate it. And you also don't get the same amount of joy that you get and you contact it second time or third time. Isn't it? First time you are getting it. Second time, third time you don't get it. It reduces. Less joy. If it is joy that is there in the object, why second time it is reducing? Why it is reducing? Anybody? Mango season you crave for. You look forward for mango season. It's coming in few months' time. May. You look forward for it. And the very first mango you buy and eat, you really enjoy. Second, third, thoda kam ho gaya. Why? If there's joy in that mango, it should bring you every time you contact it. Why in the second and third, the joy reduced? Anybody?
it's too easily accessible, then Guruji, the joy of eating is slowly diminishes because you've tasted it once, and it's just easily accessible.
No, it's not because easily accessible. Things that are there in your fridge is also easily accessible. Let's say in, I don't know about your house, let's say in your house you have a bar, but you have no interest in drinking. Alcohol is easily accessible, but you don't contact it. So it's not the easy access. What is happening?
The joy is already within you. It's when you, the joy is already within you, but it's your desire which is taking away the joy. When you have the desire, then the joy goes away, and then when you satiate the desire, like after that again it rises again. So in that in between space is actually when you're feeling yourself or the joy which is within.
See, actually what is happening is the craving is not there or reduced. In the beginning the craving is so much and you contact the object, you see the difference. You understand? Second time, the craving is reduced because you just contacted it. That's why when you indulge, 10th mango, 12th mango, I don't want that. Because in the mind, there is no desire. So what is joy that you are experiencing? Fulfillment of your desire. Fulfillment of your desire. Now, therefore, we need to analyze what is happening when you fulfill your desire. You are already in a state of happiness, bliss, enjoyment, peace, till the time the desire arises for that object. The desire is coming for that object. Now, the moment desire for that object comes, there is agitation that follows. And when you contact the object, the desire is fulfilled. Which means what? The agitation is removed. The agitation is removed. Where is the joy coming from? From within you, which was already there. Which is always there. Agitation is temporarily removed. But you seem to understand as if the joy is coming from the object, but actually the joy is coming from within you. So when there is hardly any craving, you contact, not much agitation, there is not much joy. You understand? Really speaking, so you wait, you give a gap and then you contact. Then again there is craving, there is so much more joy. So it is the trick the mind is playing. It is the trick that mind is playing, your own mind is playing. It creates desire for it, and when you contact it, you feel as if you are getting joy from it. Actually, what happens is when you contact the object for which the craving was there, it only removes the agitation created by the very craving. When the agitation created by the very craving is removed, you come in contact with the joy within. But you understand or misunderstand as if it's coming from the object. It is actually coming from within. That's all Vedanta is saying. What Vedanta says, there is no joy in the external world. It's to do with your mind's craving. If you do not have desire, will that object give you joy? It won't. Supposing you hate chocolates. You don't like chocolates. So if I come and give you chocolates, you won't be happy. There are people who love dark chocolates. They don't like that normal chocolate. So you give them dark chocolate, they'll get excited. So what is happening is, there is a craving in the mind, and that object is satisfying that craving, and when the agitation created by the craving is removed through the contact, The joy is coming from within, which is always there. That is the bliss of Atma. That is getting reflected in that particular temporary contact. And you wrongly think that it is coming from the world outside. It's coming from the object outside. There is no joy in the outside world. Continue.
Nevertheless, people devote all their time and energy to worldly acquisition and enjoyment. They spend their lifetime in acquiring material wealth and trying to find enjoyment in what they would have acquired. So they are ignoramus, lost in the world, seeking the bliss of the self in the reflected images. Succumbing to peer pressure, you follow the same pattern of life. Your worldly pursuits sooner or later lead you to despair. You remain confused and confounded. You need not lie low in this state of despair. Wake up to the realities of life. Get wiser with the eternal truths. Use your intellect to examine the objects and beings that seem to have pleasure and joy. Study them carefully. Understand their hollowness. And look for the real source of happiness within you. Seek the Supreme Self, the abode of eternal peace and bliss.
See, he's saying, because you don't understand these things, today in life, acquisition and enjoyment has become the end all and be all of life. Nobody is ever enthusiastic to work for the self. Everybody is enthusiastic to just go on, acquire and acquire and acquire more and more. That's all he's saying. Nevertheless, people devote all their time and energy to worldly acquisition and enjoyment. Isn't that what is preoccupying us today? From the time we wake up in the morning till the time we go to bed, what is that we are really doing? We are only doing activities to acquire more. And having acquired, we want to go and contact what we acquired and derive the joy from it. Why? Because our understanding is that there is joy in the outside world. As long as you believe that there is joy in the outside world, why would you move towards the center? Only when I understand that there is no joy in the outside world, I will drop it and then start pursuing. So first, you have to be clear in your head about the nature of this world. Then you will only be in the world for transactional purposes. Thereafter, you won't be in the world for drawing joy from it. See, unless and until you understand that there is nothing in this world which can bring you that happiness, you will not turn towards the self within. Your attention will not turn away from the world. So you are 100% convinced it is there in the world outside. Therefore, you are going on trying your best to get outside. He says they spend their lifetime in acquiring material wealth and trying to find enjoyment in what they look like. The whole lifetime is gone. Whole life, what have you done? You've spent all your energy, converted that energy into objects. You worked hard, 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, 14 hours, whatever, and you have accumulated a lot of stuff. What have you done? Converted your physical energy, coupled with your mental energy, into something gross material. You bought a house, you bought a car, you bought club membership, you bought first class ticket. That's all. What is all that? Money. So where did you get that money? Through your physical energy coupled with your intelligence. Isn't it? So everywhere what people are doing is converting their time and energy into material objects, thinking that when they contact the material object, they'll be more happy. But what is happening is they slowly find that the more I have, I find that more I lack. I need to get more, so So we are caught in this vicious cycle. That's what he wants to explain. So therefore, what he wants to say is stop and think at some point in time. Could this be the end all and be all of life? In other words, he's not against acquisition and enjoyment. Please understand, Vedanta is not against acquisition and enjoyment. All that Vedanta says is, let not acquisition and enjoyment be your primary goal. Acquisition and enjoyment of the contact with the world should be something that comes as a byproduct. That should not be a main goal. But today, our main goal is this. This is what Vajragovindam talks about. That's what he says. So are ignoramuses lost in the world seeking the bliss of the self and its reflected images. They are more satisfied in the images than in the truth. We succumb to peer pressure. Peer pressure because everybody gets up and runs. So we also should get up and run. Isn't it? Everybody gets up. You know, today, it's something very funny. You are paying and buying a mobile phone. And they are releasing a new version. How does it matter if you buy after 2-3 days? Or you buy after 1 week? People wait for that phone and say, oh my God, it is launching today. So morning 3 o'clock, they are queuing up. 3 o'clock in the morning, they are queuing up to get a mobile phone. As if they won't be able to buy it day after tomorrow. What is this? If this is not herd instinct and fear to share. That's what he's trying to say. Without thinking, he's just running, chasing objects. One desire ties us for next few years. We are binding ourselves with our own desires. So he says, you remain confused and confounded. Because the more you get, the more you want. You are confused. What is happening? With it, you are not happy. Without it, you are miserable. So what to do? I want to run. I want to run. That's what he means. You need not lie low in the state of despair. Wake up to the realities of life. Get wiser with the eternal truth. Meaning start thinking. Start questioning. Stop being a herd. Don't mechanically do things. Everybody sends their children abroad for university, so I have to send. There's a peer pressure there also. Everybody gets married, so I have to get married. Everybody begets children, so I have to get children. Don't fall for it. It's become a peer pressure. You know? Why can't you be independent? Why can't you be original? Get wiser with the eternal truths. Use your intellect to examine the objects, beings that seem to have pleasure and joy. Study them carefully. Understand their hollowness. And look for the real source of happiness within you. Seek the Supreme Self, the abode of eternal peace and bliss. It's so funny. In the world, how much ever you discuss this, how much ever they understand, they will still queue up for following the world. Hardly anybody really understands that there is no joy in the external world. Then he goes on to explain this concept with this poem, Pineapple and the Bee. It's a beautiful poem, Pineapple and the Bee. We'll take it up next week. You should really study this and understand and also teach this to your children and grandchildren. It's an outstanding poem. Let's conclude. Om. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva बुद्ध्यात्मना वा प्रकृते स्वभावात् करोमि अद्य सकलं परस्मै नारायणायेति समर्पयामि। हरि ओम।
हरि ओम गुरुजी।